taken up men lying upon wooden benches which were on the walls of the hut, and something like two sleeping children next to them. It seems as though not the boards, but the children were intended to make possible the crossing. I awakened with frightened thoughts. Anyone who has formed a proper idea of the abundance of dream condensation will easily be able to imagine how great a number of pages the detailed analysis of this dream must fill. Luckily for the context, I shall take from it merely the one example of astonishment in the dream, which makes its appearance in the parenthetical remark, "strangely enough." Let us take up the occasion of the dream. It is a visit of this lady, Louise N., who assisted at the work in the dream. She says, "Lend me something to read." I offer her She, by Rider Haggard. A strange book, but full of hidden sense. I try to explain to her. The eternal feminine, the immortality of our emotions. Here she interrupts me. I know that book already. Haven't you something of your own? No, my own immortal works are still unwritten. Well, when are you going to publish your so-called latest revelations, which you promised us would be good reading? She asks, somewhat sarcastically. I now perceive that she is a mouthpiece for someone else, and I become silent. I think of the effort it costs me to publish even my work on the dream, in which I have to surrender so much of my own intimate character. The best that you know you can't tell to the children. The preparation of my own body, which I am ordered to make in the dream, is thus the self-analysis necessitated in the communication of my dreams. The elder Brucker very properly finds a place here. In these first years of my scientific work it happened that I neglected a discovery until his energetic commands forced me to publish it. But the other trains of thought which start from my conversation with Louise N. go too deep to become conscious. They are sidetracked by way of the related material which has been awakened in me by the mention of Rider Haggard's She. The comment, "strangely enough," goes with this book, and with another by the same author, The Heart of the World, and numerous elements of the dream are taken from these two fantastic novels. The muddy ground over which the dreamer is carried, the chasm which must be crossed by means of the boards that have been brought along, come from She, the Indians, the girl, and the wooden house from The Heart of the World. In both novels, a woman is the leader, both treat of dangerous wanderings. She has to do with an adventurous journey to the undiscovered country, a place almost untrodden by foot of man. According to a note which I find in my record of the dream, the fatigue in my legs was a real sensation of those days. Doubtless in correspondence with this came a tired frame of mind, and the doubting question, how much further will my legs carry me? The adventure in She ends with a woman leader's meeting her death in the mysterious fire at the centre of the earth, instead of attaining immortality for herself and others. A fear of this sort has unmistakably arisen in the dream thoughts. The wooden house also is surely the coffin, that is, the grave. But the dream activity has performed its masterpiece in representing this most unwished for of all thoughts by means of a wish fulfilment. I have already once been in a grave, but it was an empty Etruscan grave near Orvieto, a narrow chamber with two stone benches on the walls, upon which the skeletons of two grown-up persons had been laid. The interior of the wooden house in the dream looks exactly like this, except that wood has been substituted for stone. The dream seems to say, if you must so soon lie in your grave, let it be this Etruscan grave. And by means of this interpolation it transforms the saddest expectation into one that is really to be desired. As we shall learn, it is, unfortunately, only the idea accompanying an emotion which the dream can change into its opposite, not usually the emotion itself. Thus I awake with frightened thoughts, even after the dream has been forced to represent my idea, that perhaps the children will attain what has been denied to the father, a fresh allusion to the strange novel in which the identity of a person is preserved through a series of generations covering 2,000 years. 8. In the context of another dream there is a similar expression of astonishment at what is experienced in the dream. This, however, is connected with a striking and skilfully contrived attempt at explanation which might well be called a stroke of genius, so that I should have to analyze the whole dream merely for the sake of it, even if the dream did not possess two other features of interest. I am traveling during the night between the 18th and the 19th of July on the Southern Railway, and in my sleep I hear someone call out, "Hawthorne, 10 minutes!" I immediately think of Holothurion, of a museum of natural history, that here is the place where brave men have vainly resisted the domination of their overlord. Yes, the Counter-Reformation in Austria. as though it were a place in Styria or the Tyrol. Now I distinctly see a little museum in which the remains or the possessions of these men are preserved. I wish to get off, but I hesitate to do so. Women with fruit are standing on the platform. They crouch on the floor, and in that position hold out their baskets in an inviting manner. I hesitate, in doubt whether we still have time, but we are still standing. I am suddenly in another compartment in which the leather and the seats are so narrow that one's back directly touches the backrest. I am surprised at this, but I may have changed cars while asleep. Several people, among them an English brother and sister, a row of books distinctly on a shelf on the wall. I see The Wealth of Nations, then Matter and Motion by Maxwell. The books are thick and bound in brown linen. The man asks his sister for a book by Schiller and whether she has forgotten it. These are books which first seem mine, then seem to belong to the brother and sister. At this point I wish to join in the conversation in order to confirm and support what is being said. I awaken, sweating all over my body because all the windows are shut. The train stops at Marburg. While writing down the dream, a part of it occurs to me which my memory wished to omit. I say to the brother and sister about a certain work, "It is from," but I correct myself, "It is by." The man remarks to his sister, "He said it correctly." The dream begins with the name of a station, which probably must have partially awakened me. For this name, which was Marburg, I substituted Holthorn. The fact that I heard Marburg when it was first called, or perhaps when it was called a second time, is proved by the mention in the dream of Schiller, who was born in Marburg, though not in the one in Styria. Now this time, although I was travelling first class, it was under very disagreeable circumstances. The train was overcrowded. I had met a gentleman and lady in my compartment who seemed persons of quality, but who did not have the good breeding, or who did not think it worthwhile to conceal their displeasure at my intrusion. My polite salutation was not answered, and although the man and the woman sat next each other, with their backs in the direction in which we were riding, the woman made haste to preempt the place opposite her and next the window with her umbrella. The door was immediately closed, and demonstrative remarks about the opening of windows were exchanged. Probably I was quickly recognized as a person hungry for fresh air. It was a hot night, and the air in the compartment, thus shut on all sides, was almost suffocating. My experience as a traveller leads me to believe that such inconsiderate, obtrusive conduct marks people who have only partly paid for their tickets or not at all. When the conductor came and I presented my dearly bought ticket, the lady called out ungraciously and as though threateningly, "My husband has a pass." She was a stately figure with sour features, in age not